Hello and welcome to Hogan Lovells Newsbeat, the podcast designed to keep you up to date with what's been happening in the world of pensions over the last 2 weeks. I'm Claire Southern from the HL team, and I'll be taking you through the twists and turns of the last 14 days. In this session, we'll be looking at the Pension Regulator's review of climate governance reporting, a couple of HMRC newsletters focused on the abolition of the lifetime allowance, a rather worrying report from Wealth at Work, and a juicy pensions ombudsman determination. So, first up, the pensions regulator has been having a poke at pensions TCFD reporting. Listeners will know that pension schemes have been under increasing duties to report on various environmental, social, and governance issues. From October 2021, the very largest schemes were required to produce a TCFD report, and that obligation has trickled down to smaller schemes now. The pensions regulator has had a look at some 30 of these reports. The review found that more than 60% of the reports in the sample had some form of net zero goal with a target of 2050 or earlier. The review also found examples of trustee action on climate risk, including increasing allocation to low carbon tracker funds, exploring climate opportunities such as forestry, green bonds, and committing funds to private market renewables, and working with investment managers to obtain emissions data from additional asset classes such as property, infrastructure, and hedge funds. Now, complying with the TCFD reporting requirements is already pretty difficult, as there are layers of advice and guidance from both the pensions regulator and the Department of Work and Pensions. The pensions regulator has highlighted some things that should be considered when putting together these reports. They suggest that trustees should include scheme information, such as scheme size, near the beginning of the report. They recommend being concise and efficient when addressing disclosure requirements. Reports overall varied in length, up to 94 pages, with an average of 38 pages. And where trustees use the reporting process to identify additional work, they should set a plan, monitor, and update on progress in their next report. Next up, HMRC Pension Schemes newsletters 157 and 158, and a special call out for those attracted to the dry and technical to lean closer in and listen hard, and for others out there to let the ears wander away a bit. Listeners will know that the lifetime allowance is in the process of being abolished. This sounds like it should be straightforward, but it is anything but. Alongside the removal of the lifetime allowance, government has introduced two new allowances which are designed to restrict the amount of tax-free cash that can be taken out of a pension scheme, the lump sum allowance and the lump sum and death benefit allowance. To make life a bit more interesting, there are enhancement factors that can apply. In addition, we have a new authorised lump sum called a pension commencement excess lump sum. A PECLS or a PECLS, depending on how posh you are. Now, one of the big headaches for pension schemes is the obligation to produce statements for members telling them how much of their lump sum allowance has already been used up, which is fiendishly difficult because there are all sorts of twiddles that can apply. Now, on the 28th of March, HMRC published a newsletter which seeks to answer 39 of the commonly asked questions regarding the abolition of the lifetime allowance, including how a PECLS is connected to pension entitlement and issues relating to retirement on and around the 6th of April 2024. The following week, we had another newsletter that highlighted that there were some amendments that would be made to the current regulations governing the abolition of the lifetime allowance, and some of those would have retrospective effect. HMRC has suggested that some people may want to wait until those amendments are in place before they take or transfer their benefits, including where members with enhanced protection are transferring to a new provider. And now, at the other end of the technical spectrum, a report from Wealth at Work reveals a worrying insight into Joe Public's knowledge of pensions. Wealth at Work looked at over 2,000 working adults with defined contribution workplace pensions. 49% of those people said they were unaware of what their pension is invested in. 29% said they were unaware that their pension is even invested in anything. 38% of respondents said they were unaware that they had a choice of investment funds to choose from. More than a fifth said that they had chosen their pension investments based on their values and beliefs, such as environmental or religious beliefs, with 40% revealing that they would increase their contributions if they knew their pension was invested in funds that aligned with their values. Now, one person who clearly is very much on top of pension scheme investment is Mr. R from a recent case that the Pensions Ombudsman has given a determination on. There's a lot of detail that sits behind the case, but the simple facts are Mr. R is something of a sophisticated investor. He had worked in financial markets for over 30 years and is something of an expert on Japanese equities. Mr. R had substantial assets in a SIP, a chunk of which was held in cash. Now, back in 2020, he became concerned about his cash holdings and wanted to transfer them to another SIP provider who he thought could hold them in Japanese yen. He diligently completed all the paperwork to effect the transfer, but things did not go smoothly. Now, there's a lot in the determination about the delays that Mr. R faced, but interestingly, the Ombudsman concludes that the delays that could be attributed specifically to the original SIP provider were just over a month. If they had acted as they should, Mr. R's transfer would have taken place on the 7th of September and not the 16th of October. Now, what's really interesting about this case is how the Ombudsman has looked at Mr. R's loss. In a twist of fate, it turned out that the new SIP provider could not hold the transferred assets in yen, which is why Mr. R had originally been so keen to move over. So the Ombudsman looked at what he thought Mr. R would have done if he had received his transfer on the 7th of September and had then discovered he couldn't go into yen. He accepted that Mr. R would have immediately invested in an equity fund. Interestingly, though, he also accepted that Mr. R would have sold this equity fund in mid-October, crystallising a profit. The Ombudsman awarded damages to Mr. R based on that profit. He also awarded him £1,000 for distress and inconvenience and ordered that any platform charges incurred between the 7th of September and the 16th of October should be refunded to him. Now, this is a bit of a head-scratching one, although I have to say I think Mr. R was an unusual complainant and he could produce significant evidence to back up his claims about how he would have invested and indeed disinvested. So a big thank you for listening to the session. I hope you've enjoyed the whip through of the last 2 weeks. If you'd like to know more about us, click on the link. And if there are any in-house pension lawyers out there who have not signed up to our session on the 1st of May, where they can meet Dominic Harris, the Pensions Ombudsman, please get in touch.